League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Is ESPN 97.5 brought to you by Zadda Jewelers, KFNC, and 97.9 HD2 Mont Bellevue, Houston.
Don't sweat the technique.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
One in the books, two to go, second hour of the show. It's Brian McDonald, it's myself, Joel Blank, and we are now happy to be joined by Cole Thompson, the managing editor of Texans Wire. You can find him on X at Mr. That's MR, Cole Thompson. Cole, always a pleasure to have you on and kick it around. We're going to talk with you for the next couple of segments, talking some football, starting with your favorite professional football team of the moment, the Houston Texans. We were just talking about the fact that is the glass half full or the glass half empty? Paul Gallant says, well, if you played a different team, the Texans might not have been so lucky and they got a win. If you look at what we saw, I think collectively, the offense looked really, really good.
Yeah.
And you saw enough from this team to believe they're only going to get better.
I would agree with that. I think the main thing that you have to look at is imagine what this offense could have been last year if they had a rushing attack. And now you have that with Joe Mixon. I think that people kind of forget that when you get a guy that's used to playing in this style of offense, because if it's the same brand underneath Zach Taylor, all comes from the Shanahan coaching style mechanisms, you're going to get consistency. And I think that's the biggest blessing, is that you didn't have a guy last year in Devin Singletary you could trust. You didn't have a guy in Damian Pierce you could trust. Neither were an ideal fit for what Bobby Slowick wants to run. You got that in Joe Mixon. And this is consistent. A guy that can move and set you up for second and manageable, second and short, second and long, even if you have to. And then, of course, you throw in a guy like Stephon Diggs, who's still just getting used to the offense, but gets in the end zone twice. And by the way, screw it. Nico Collins is down there somewhere for a massive gain. You heard CJ Stroud today say, the sky is the limit for Nico Collins. I see no flaws in this game. And that's not even to mention Tank Dell and then also Dalton Schultz, who are really good on third down. Kenyon Green, we don't talk about him enough and how he played in this game. Really good game, especially run blocking. Highest pass pro grade of any interior offensive lineman last week. So everything that you're seeing is just correctable with the fundamentals of mistakes, and it's only going to get better because of its live reps.
But the follow-up on that, because I know BMAC wants to get in here, Joe Mixon, you mentioned it. That's 1 week.
Yeah.
The sustainability of a veteran running back, been in the league quite a while. There's, you know, how much do you continue to use them? Do you expect these kind of results week in, week out? Or is this one where you just take it a week at a time?
I think you got to take it a week at a time. But the question is, what do you do if you have to turn to somebody else? You know, last week, Cam Akers inactive. My big question, why? Why are you having a guy that impressed and showed you he can work in this offense and also has played in this offense? Why are you keeping him on the sidelines when he can be that difference maker? And he's shown you, when fully healthy, that's a dude you want on the football field. And it's going to take a lot of pressure off of Mixon. I love 159 rushing yards. I love the fact that he had 30 carries in a game. But 30 carries throughout a 17-game period is 264 carries. And make no mistake, when you look at the numbers, Mixon during his time when he was in Cincinnati averaged 243 carries per season. But that's not sustainable when you're 29, about to turn 30. Like, the big 3-0 is the ultimate turning point for running backs. And people nowadays are saying running backs don't matter. Well, if you play to be 30, you lasted longer than most people expect. This is year 8 for a guy. So I want to be able to see that consistency on the ground. If it is Damian Pierce, it's Damian Pierce. If it's Cam Akers, it's Cam Akers.
Cole Thompson joining us. He's the managing editor of Texans Wire. Let's stick with Joe Mixon for one more here.
Why not?
Cole, because the hot takes really started popping off on other stations around town, calling Joe Mixon the most talented running back in Texans history, which, hello, Arian Foster, that's a bit of a hot take. But, like, I mean, he is, to me, a perfect scheme fit for the system. We saw how explosive he was, how easily he found the cutback lanes and made the best of the blocks that the offensive line give him. Like, where would you put – I think we all agree Arian Foster is the best running back in Texans history. But after that, I think there is a conversation that Joe Mixon might be second. Where would you put Joe Mixon?
Name me three other running backs that were consistently playing for the Houston Texans before Arian Foster arrived. Do so. Yep, okay, hold up. I'm gonna count down. Five,
Dominic Williams,
four,
Steve
three,
Slayton,
two,
David Johnson.
Okay, there we go. See, exactly.
you said David Johnson.
See, wow. Exactly.
Put me on
Thank
the
you.
Clock.
Thank you.
What was the guy with two names from LSU?
Dominic Williams.
No,
yeah, he was Dominic Davis and then
That's
Dominic
right.
Williams.
He was
really good for the Texans.
I thought you were talking about Alfred Blue. We got to talk about him. That's a great guy, too.
Nah, Alfred Blue sucks.
I think what you have to realize is the fact that Mixon can also be effective in the passing game only ups his ante. I mean, this was a guy that finished with the most total yards of scrimmage in week one by any player. So if he stays healthy, he's here for the next 4 years. He's had a three-year, $27 million extension that doesn't kick in until 2025. That is going to be the X factor. That is going to be the bell cow running back. That is going to be the guy that they expect to be the long-term answer next to C.J. Stroud. He could finish number two all time by the Texans history, and it's a good thing. And what's really interesting is that you see people in Cincinnati kind of reacting to what type of player Joe Mixon was, especially now that he won AFC Player of the Week. He also won FedEx Ground Player of the Week. And everyone seems to be very hyped up because they realize he was there through the dark times of Cincinnati. Then he gets to go ahead and go to a Super Bowl. Now he gets to be on a team that feels like it's Super Bowl man-made. And so they feel very happy that he is at least going to a situation where he is gets to be that same X factor, that bell cow. From a scheme set standpoint, he's number two all time for me. Already one game in, but again,
one game now.
Let's week nine. Let's get to week nine, and then we can have a better feel. Because again, it's 30 carries against a very good Colts front, but also when you think about it, it's also the Colts, and you found a way to beat the living out of the Colts.
Well,
the
good news is that you mentioned it. He's happy. He's got a fullback slash tight end that's blocking for him. He loves the line. He loves being in an environment where, again, he's in a winning situation. So at least he's happy, too. So you think going forward, hopefully you get similar results. On the flip side of being happy, not so happy. If you're looking at it, we mentioned in conversations right after the game on Monday, we were talking about the fact that, hey, look, as good as they were in run blocking, pass blocking had a little to be desired in terms of, especially early in the game. We talked about the deep balls. We talked about some of the defensive issues, linebacker and or when you're looking at what they were doing. If you were to say your biggest concern coming out of week one for the Houston Texans, what would it be?
Explosive plays. Just on defense. Now, for the offensive line, I would say definitely the false start penalties to where you're looking at it where it's now 3rd and 6 to 3rd and 11. The last thing you want to do is put yourself in a situation where you're at midfield and now you have to punt and you don't want to punt, where maybe you can go for it on 4th down because it is a 4th and 1. But that was kind of the case. Kenyon Green, again, really good game, solid performance. Why was it 3rd and 11? False start. Mm-hmm. Again, you have to also accept at this point, Laremy Tunsil is a Pro Bowl caliber left tackle who is going to finish with 13 false start penalties in a regular season. At this point, it is a common dread. Death, taxes, number 78 getting flagged at least once per game for a 5-yard backup. Back. So to me, it's one of those things where if you accept that, then everything else is correctable. I thought that it was a really good game plan by Juice Scruggs in the run blocking. I thought he was actually the biggest blessing in disguise for the run blocking back at his natural center position. There's a cohesive balance of having these guys all out on the football field for the first time. And also remember, you didn't have LT for the entire training camp. He got a few reps in a practice, but for most of the time, he was not playing during the preseason. And the reason why is because you look at the backup tackle situation, it's not ready to go to Blake Fisher. Blake Fisher may be the long-term answer, and it was so mind-boggling, you know, when you think about this, guys. They were all saying, and so many fans, why are we taking a left tackle prospect in round two? Laremy Tunsil is going into a contract year next year, and Titus Howard has not been able to stay healthy. You do the math on needing a right tackle for the long-term future. That's just it, but I feel like that if you can get more protection and just be able to give Stroud a little bit more time, it's only going to get better. But you also have a freaking phenom at quarterback that just makes acrobatic plays that nobody can even imagine. Like, you heard Tank Dell on Monday say, I didn't even imagine he could do something like that, where he's staying course, falling down to one knee, eyeballs still fixated on Brevin Jordan. Oh, I'm just going to go ahead and make an easy pass for a first down. Like, when you have a quarterback like that, sometimes you just have it better than most.
Cole Thompson joining us. You can find him on Twitter at Mr. Cole Thompson. Let's flip to the other line, Cole, because obviously they've invested a ton in the defensive line. Obviously, first round pick with Will Anderson. You spend the money on Danielle Hunter. You spend the money on Danico Autry, although obviously he hasn't been able to play for the Texans yet because of the suspension. I think a lot of the people sometimes point out, hey, you know, Hunter didn't get a sack. Will Anderson didn't get a sack. People sometimes fixate on sacks. But against a guy like Anthony Richardson, you can't get too far past him. You got to maintain your lanes. You can't let him run. So I don't really worry about sacks in a game plan against a running quarterback like that. But what'd you think of the performance of the defensive line?
Jonathan Taylor, for the first time in three games, rushed for 48 yards. He rushed for under a triple-digit marker next to his name. I feel really good about this defensive line. The other thing I feel really good about that people don't seem to pay attention to is you got two interior defensive line sacks from Foley Fotokoski and Mario Edwards Jr. And the one thing that you know about D'Amico Ryan's defense is he likes having smaller-bodied defensive tackles that can bull rush up the middle and add that extra pressure. You have that now. You also still have a veteran in Jerry Hughes that can be that third down guy. You have Derek Barnett, who came in last year and played extremely well. And you feel like that once you get back to Nico Autry, now you have a guy like Mario Edwards that can also interchange in with him, play defensive end, play defensive tackle, third down plays. Maybe you shift both of them inside. They can be bull rushers. Foley Fotokoski moves to not only a run support guy. But the fact of the matter is that there are few hyper-extensive athletes built like Anthony Richardson that can just find ways to take small little creases and turn them into substantial gains. But at the same time, you have to realize that for most of the second and third quarter, it was an obsolete run game. A few first downs here and there, but for the most part, it was a very quiet afternoon for Anthony Richardson. And then when he finally got pressured, look at that. Kalen Bullitt comes up with a big sacks.
Missed coverage back lane that opened up for Richardson that got him some of those yards. But you mentioned the defensive line. Before we kind of switch gears, I'm curious on Settle. Is that a guy that we can still rely on that could be a contributor?
Yeah, I think in run support. I think when you're looking at like a third and one situation, second and short, that's a guy that will win lower center of gravity, work his way into the backfield, be able to get that tackle behind the line of scrimmage, set you up for third and uncomfortable. The thing that I think you're going into this week that you want to do, especially against a young quarterback like Caleb Williams, is put him in third and uncomfortable, whatever that may be. Third and seven, third and 11. If it's third and three, but you know that you don't have a run game, so you have to pass, that's fine because you got a young cornerback in Kamari Laster that will get better, and you have an all-pro caliber cornerback in Derek Stingley on the opposing side. Plus, Kalen Bullock looks awesome in coverage. So yeah. If you take that deep shot down the field, isn't it kind of funny that you're going to have a guy that was a former teammate of Caleb Williams at USC now knowing how he's going to go through his progression? I actually am calling it right now. Kalen Bullock's going to get an interception in this game on Sunday.
Ooh, all right. And no Roma Dunze, so at least, you know, from a coverage standpoint, you got one less big-time receiver to worry about.
Yep, and you also have to make sure that you get the middle of the field taken away, which you can because Jalen Petrie has at least looked better when playing in the nickel position than he does when he's playing deep down at coverage.
There you go. We're not going to get a second guest. We're going to keep the same guest and go to a second topic as we get some SEC football next. Cole's going to stay with us. We got another segment to go with him, so stay right where you are. We're going to continue to roll on. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Branham out today. It's me and BMAC joined by Cole Thompson. We've been kicking it around in terms of the Texans' point of view and everything that he does and gives to you as the managing editor of Texans Wire. But little did you know that he's also the host for SEC Unfiltered. If you did, good on you. Again, someone that you should follow for all your football needs at Mr. Cole Thompson. Let's get into some SEC stuff, Cole. You are the expert there. We know that we've got teams that everybody cares about in this state as it relates to the conference. As you look at the hot topics around, and Georgia still looks like that they are going to be the big dog, so to speak, yet again. But let's talk about the fact that you've got some local teams that are going in different directions that are trying to get, you know, one, continue to keep it going in the case of BMAC's Horns, or the case where A&M looked like for all that they were going to do under Elko, they couldn't move the football, they didn't look very good, and you're wondering what they could truly be.
I'm going to start with you stay calm. You sit back there and don't say a dang thing yet. Because I hate that I have to do this. Texas is built for the SEC. That's number one. And the bottom line is that when you look at last year, now after the performance they put on in the Big House, they were masquerading as a Big 12 team last year. And by the way, BMAC, you can chime in on this. When we talk about Red River, you throw that game out, nobody knows what's going to happen. It doesn't matter how good either side is. Someone can come away with the dub. 59-0.
Yeah, it happened last year.
Exactly. So my point is that that's one of those games where I'm not going to go put too much stock into, but Texas is built to win in the SEC because of the way that Steve Sarkisian has attacked the transfer portal, but more importantly, the recruiting on the offensive line. Go look at that entire offensive line unit and tell me where they last played football. I'll tell you what, it's not like Colorado that's just bringing in players from every single nook and cranny across the country. No, it's being developed from the high school level, and they're setting a standard. Cam Williams is the weak point of your team. And by the way, a weak point is saying he's a B type of player. Meanwhile, you got four starters returning. And last week, everyone was talking about how you go up to Ann Arbor, you're playing in a big time environment, the largest stadium in college football. And there's some people out there saying, oh, well, you know, what if we make this a physical football game? If we have a Big Ten bully football performance? Well, the bullies were Texas because of Texas had the bigger offensive linemen. Texas had the bigger defensive linemen. Texas had the better linebackers. But they haven't stopped paying attention to speed. And everyone on this roster has a role. They know what each person represents. Isaiah Bond is a vertical threat. Silas Bolden is a vertical threat. Matthew Golden is a touchdown machine inside the red zone. Gunnar Helm is a third down mover of the sticks. You got young players acting like veterans at the running back position. So Texas, to me, you tell me that I get to go put them up against Georgia, I think it goes down to the wire. You tell me that I got to go put them against Ohio State, I put them down to the wire. You tell me I got to go put them up against Alabama, they went into Nick Saban's house last year and disrespected the GOAT. So, I mean, I have to sit here as an Alabama grad and go, tip of the cap to you, Steve Sarkisian.
But before we get Brian too excited here and he needs a break, I watched Michigan play the week before and they looked awful.
They were awful.
And so, as much as I was impressed by Texas, I also want to say Michigan's not the team that won the national championship.
No, but that's the beauty of it, Joel, is that we talk about this all the time that, oh, we bring back the national championship. Well, the trophy's not on the football field with you when you're playing. Like the trophy is just in a trophy case. They lost a lot. And I think that the big thing is that the performance you saw on Saturday is more so an indication that this is a year where you're going to have to rebuild the foundation. It doesn't mean you're going to be one of those teams that ends up going 7-5 or 8-4. I still think that you could see Michigan hold its own, go 9-3, maybe find a way to get an upset win over Oregon. The big question now is if you are Ryan Day and you lose this game, how are you not firing up the resume? Because this should be one of those times where there are no questions. Ohio State should win this game and they should win outright.
He can't survive another loss to Michigan, right? They've lost three in a row. Yeah. If you lose to Michigan for the fourth time in a row to this Michigan team,
that's the problem. It's this.
He's
Michigan
not going to lose, though. Yeah. I mean, when you look at how loaded they are.
I'm with you. Yeah. I'm just saying, hypothetically, I mean, you bring it up. He's got to win this game. If he doesn't win this game, four in a row to this Michigan team, I don't know how you survive.
B-Mac, do me a favor, though. Just humor me for a second. This is a coach that has been to the college football playoff twice, been to a national championship, has been to a Big Ten title game, albeit 2020. He has 9 career losses. And they're saying, you're not good enough to be an Ohio State's head coach. What do you say to the next guy that comes in? You just fired a dude who had 10 losses.
Here's the problem, Cole. You're putting rationality into the conversation. I know. There's nothing rational about college football fans and the hiring and firing processes.
The beauty that I will say, covering both sports, is I can have a rational conversation with an NFL fan. I can do no such thing in college football. There is no such thing as a rational fanatic that arrives on Saturday afternoon.
No, there's certainly not. Cole Thompson joining us. You can find him on Twitter at Mr. Cole Thompson. He's the host for SEC Unfiltered. So, yeah, getting back to the Longhorns, future national champions, you look at that schedule. Right now, I had to do this to you, Cole. I'm sorry. Right now, Georgia, they put out the line. They're a -1 favorite at Austin. So, I mean, that's the obvious. If you're looking at the Texas schedule, obviously they could still get into the playoff with one win because of the 12-team playoff. But when you look at the Texas schedule, other than Georgia, what presents to you the toughest roadblock on their way to getting into the playoff?
Can I just say UTSA only because if you remember what happened last year? Okay, hang on. What did you do last year? Let's bring this back up real fast.
Yeah, okay.
No. It was you went and you played a blue blood school in their backyard and won by double digits. Who was hanging around in the fourth quarter?
I know, and the same thing happened with Rice in the opener last year. So they've had those moments. I'm not going to dispute that. What I will say, because I think the most popular answer to my question would be OU.
No.
I mean, I know. But I tell me if I'm wrong, Cole. My answer is actually at Arkansas.
It's at Arkansas.
Okay.
It is at Arkansas. Right. So it is 100%
I'm justified
at
to be scared of that game.
You 100% are justified. Remember what happened
three years ago?
You want to be all happy and you want to be all high and mighty. We get to bring you back down to reality to 2021. That was a game to where Texas was ill-prepared because they went in too confident, thinking that they were going to hold their own against an Arkansas team that has failed to deliver. Well, Bi Petrino is back in the building, and whether or not we want to make a motorcycle joke, insert it here, that's fine and dandy. But what I look at is they found a way to shoot themselves in the foot last week against Oklahoma State. When you go back and look at the numbers, this was a game that Oklahoma State did not win. It was a game that Arkansas lost.
Agreed.
And speaking of games, we got to talk about Texas A&M because this is a game where I personally think you're not going to see Florida win the football game or you're not going to see Texas A&M win the football game. What you're going to see is one of these two teams lose the football game in the swamp environment.
Do you believe in Connor Wigman?
I believe that Connor Wigman is still a quarterback that can be successful. My question is, will he be successful with Colin Klein as the offensive coordinator? And I think that it's very fair to say so because of look at the style of quarterbacks that he worked with at Kansas State. Mobility, the ability to just get quick strikes out, not a lot of deep shots. I feel like that Marcel Reed, the backup who has won the job, and according to Mike Elko today during the teleconference for the SEC coaches, has proven he is the QB2. That's a guy that fits the system more for Klein, but there has to be a reason why you bench Wigman. And honestly, when you look at last week's game against McNeese, yeah, you feel good about the direction that he's going in because, again, you were playing against a very elite defense against Notre Dame, which found a way to find a way to fumble the bag in South Bend, Indiana against NIU. But still, it's a great secondary. You had 125 passing yards against McNeese. That's not a winning formula when you go into the swamp.
But you also got to believe that right now it looks like the one that got away is playing at Georgia Tech because, yeah. I mean, Hanks King looks like a guy that if they had him at the helm with everything else that they got, that would be a different situation and could have been against Notre Dame.
The crazy part is that you wonder, what was the problem with Hanks King? Was it him just being in Jimbo's offense? Was it him working with Jimbo's style of coordination? If you get him with Bi Petrino, does that end up saving Jimbo's job? So sometimes you got to fall on the sword and just be thankful that you go ahead and move off of a terrible situation. $77 million later, you're biting yourself in the keister. But still, at this point, you feel a lot better with Mike Elko leading the charge. But it did cost you a quarterback that right now also has a shot at potentially leading this team to an ACC title game.
So I can't let you get away without asking you a question about Alabama.
Yep, let's go.
So Joel and Jeremy and I talked about this on Monday during our college football wrap-up. I know the final score looked fine, but it was 14-13 going into the fourth quarter. What's going on with your Crimson Tide?
They're a beautiful franchise that is just going to be dominating when they have to play you in the SEC championship. I'm glad that you brought that up because there are so many people that don't believe me when I said on the preview show for SEC Unfiltered, I believe that USF is one of those sneaky group of five schools you have to watch to make it to the college football playoff because of Alex Golish is a really good coordinator when it comes to offensive skills. And more importantly, he has gotten his team prepared to be able to say, oh, we got to go play Alabama. No. Alabama has to play USF. So when they decided to go for the field goal instead of taking a fourth down conversion and try to get that touchdown, it was kind of a waving of the white flag and going, okay, we impressed. Go ahead and just score 21 on us. Alabama doesn't have the depth. That's the problem with this team of Kalen DeBoer. They feel really good at the front heavy part. Ryan Williams should be winning Homecoming King. Instead, he's going to be beating the brakes off of the Wisconsin Badgers this weekend. Oh, please. The 16.5 point line is just being very nice to Wisconsin.
I just told you during the break, Wisconsin's terrible. They ain't beating anybody.
But I do think that when you look at this team, the offensive line, the starting five is really solid. The starting five on the defensive front is really solid. They don't have the depth right now. They're building it. I think that's a good step in the right direction for Kalen DeBoer. But they are a team where if you're trusting your backups to have to deliver, in years past, it just felt like, oh, we're implementing a five-star underneath Nick Saban. That's not the team this year. But in a few years, it could be that way. I honestly think that this is going to be the weakest Kalen DeBoer-led roster we have seen in a hot minute. And still, they're probably 10-2 at worst, and that's good enough to get you in the college football playoff. You guys may not like to hear this, but that script day carries a lot of weight, and so do ratings when it comes to getting 12 teams in the dance.
Yeah, I just feel like he has to prove that he can recruit somewhat the way Saban did, and they'll be just fine because he's won everywhere he's gone. He's a really good forward-thinking head coach, and I think that they're going to get it right. But it's like so many coaches. It's one thing to say we got our guy. Now, as we mentioned, Fickell at Wisconsin, you got your guy.
Yeah.
But you got to take a smash mouth, drive it into your gut running game and say, now I'm going to try in a couple of years. I need a couple of years if I'm going to switch to a more modernized passing game. And that takes time and you're going to take L's.
The other part is just like it's Phil Lungo's offense and you're still feeling like you're running Paul Chryst's system,
right.
Which that's the weird part for me. You go out, you make a hire that you feel like is going to upgrade your passing attack. And it's pedestrian at best right now in Camp Randall. I mean, that's just my personal belief. But so far, when you look at the 2025 rankings, Alabama, they're not playing second fiddle. It's like you woke up on Groundhog's Day, and instead of Bill Murray being there, you recast it with, I don't know, maybe it's Paul Rudd. Like, that's how it feels at this point. It's just the new story, Groundhog Day 2. They couldn't get the finances going, so instead, all right, we're just going to go recast you.
Well, there you go, Cole. We really appreciate
you
coming in.
That's a hell of a comparison, an analogy. Thank you, Cole.
B-Mac loves that stuff because he's the big movie guy left with us. The family, we don't get to the movies as much. B-Mac goes by himself.
Of course he does. So do I.
Okay. Well, that's weird on both of you.
Whatever. I don't care. By the way, upset of the week. I'm calling it now. South Carolina goes and gets the dub over Brian Kelly. Has never lost at LSU an 11 a.m. kick. It's going to happen this weekend.
South Carolina's quarterback won't be able to complete enough passes. I know he's a great athlete, but
I don't care. Williams-Brice Stadium is the most underappreciated atmosphere in all of college football. And you will see Cock Nation rise up on Saturday night.
Okay, all right. That was on Cole that note, Thompson. Cut
before
his
we
microphone.
Get in any more trouble, yeah, Brian, you do that, and we'll get to a break. We appreciate Cole Thompson. He's the managing editor of Texans Wire, host for SEC Unfiltered. Please follow the man at Mr. Cole Thompson. We've got more to get into, and we're going to get into it next as we continue to spin the wheel on Texans Talk. Garrett Williams, a.k.a. Houston Stressins on Twitter, is going to join us next, and we're going to kick it around and have some fun. Stay tuned for the second half of the show coming up right now on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Before we go to the break, look, there's my good friend Largo is a big fan of this, and I need to tell you all about the fact that if you are looking for answers, if you have issues, especially like hair loss, I'm telling you about my good friend, Doc Linville. He is phenomenal at helping so many people in so many ways. He's got plastic surgery. He's got Botox. He's got spa treatments. But the things that he's really, really an expert that I have personal experience on, the PRP treatments, you've heard about in athletics. Well, PRP treatments also work with your hair and also the NeoGraft procedure. You get one, you get the other, you get both, depending on where your hair is at when you get a free consultation with Doc and his staff. Normally, it costs people $150 when they walk in off the street. You listen to me, you want to talk to him, all you got to do is go to 975hair.com right now. You get a free consultation, save the $150, and just ask questions, get answers, and have them explain how everything goes, how everything works. That's what I did. I got a free consultation, and Doc told me, hey, look, you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head, no matter how bald you go in other areas. So he essentially takes some of that hair, repurposes it where you need it most. That's the entire NeoGraft procedure. And before you know it, you've got hair growing again where you didn't have hair. You love the way you look. It improves your overall morale on a daily basis and your self-confidence. It's phenomenal. If you're not there yet, you can also do the PRP treatment. You've got hair. It's just not as thick and strong as it used to be. It's like fertilizer for your lawn. The PRP treatment actually gets you that hair at the right level, at the right strength, at the right color and direction as the rest of your hair, and you get more coverage area. They take care of you. All you got to do is get in contact with them. No signing on the dotted line, no money out of pocket, no commitments to be made, just a question and answer session and them explaining their facilities and what they do for you. Check them out today. Go to 975hair.com. Tell them I sent you by.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Hey, we are pleased to be joined by another guest as we've got 90 in the books and 90 still to go. Second half of the show. And as we go to the second half out of halftime, Garrett Williams, a.k.a. Houston Stressins, is on Twitter. He is a great follow. I was just saying that I read his stuff frequently at Texans Commenter. On X, you need to follow him, especially if you're a fan of the Texans. He's got everything that you need to know. We're going to play a little game. We're going to have you in on a weekly basis. We're going to have some fun.
Joel, I appreciate you guys having me. I'm a big fan of what you guys do. And, you know, as I say on my Twitter, are you blessing or are you stressing? I'm definitely blessing today. I appreciate you guys having me on.
No doubt about it, man. And you and I were talking about it during the break we were really – the fact that we've come so much full circle in a little over a year's time. The fact that, you know, a little more than a year ago, we were questioning Cal McNair. We were questioning, you know, his competency, what he was doing. We were
never quit.
We were talking about, you know, where this team was going. When were we going to start winning games again? And now, a little over a year later, we got the right coach, we got the right quarterback, we got a playoff appearance and a playoff win and a division title, and now we got a win in week one. So we're going to have some fun and talk about a positive Texans team.
Yeah, finally. And, you know, I've been telling all my friends on social media, it's been a long time coming, and we deserve every bit of this. So I've been enjoying every bit of good news. So, you know, soak it up.
Absolutely.
We enjoy it.
All right, so blessing or stressing? You're gonna present us with some things you're either blessed or stressed about, and we'll kick it around. Where do you want to start with, Garrett?
I could barely hear him, but...
Where do you want to start with? If you were saying we're going to play blessing or stressing, what topic are we kicked around first that we're either right that we're even stressing about or that you are not so worried about?
Yeah, so, you know, when I found out we were doing this segment, I went to my audience on Twitter and asked them, and one person, Shane Dawson, if he was shot, that's a weird name, on Instagram said, are we blessing or stressing about the pass blocking? I am going to say that I am blessing. I know that a lot of fans watched the game and might have thought initially that the pass blocking was not up to par, up to snuff. But I'm still blessing for a couple reasons. One, it's week one. You got rust. Two, the environment in Indianapolis was a raucous environment. So the pressures that I did see, a majority of them were, you could tell, miscommunication errors. It wasn't from a lack of skill. It was guys just coming free. So I'm still blessing on the pass pro, and I think we'll be good to go come next week.
Yeah, I think I lean blessing as well. Like, I was stressed during the game. I mean, whenever they would get to CJ, hell, he's having to throw passes off his knees too while he's slipping on the turf. I was a little stressed in the moment. But, I mean, Kenyon Green had a great pass blocking grade from PFF, which is something we were obviously concerned about coming into the season. Obviously, Laremy Tunsil, there's no questions there. And really the only thing is the thing where they struggled in pass pro, which we talked about earlier in the week, wasn't other than the one time Titus Howard got pushed into Stroud. It wasn't that like they're getting manhandled, something like you would fear not being able to be fixed just because they're outmanned. It was more getting confused by the pickups on the twists and the stunts, which you hope is coachable and correctable. So I will say blessing.
See, I'm blessing as well, simply because of the fact that, one, you mentioned one of the things, which was I needed to see what Kenyon Green was going to be, and I needed to see if he was going to be serviceable at all, specifically because we already know he was supposed to be a good run blocker, because that's what he specialized in at A&M. But the fact that he was so good in week one also gives me a lot of positive vibes that he's just going to get better. And on the flip side, when Tunsil doesn't play and is hardly practicing in training camp and in the preseason, he's only going to get back to form. Even with Titus Howard, regardless of what you feel long-term, Titus Howard with more reps is going to get better. But overall, Juice Scruggs, first game at center two, I'm looking at these guys. The younger guys are going to get better. The veterans are going to get back to form. And they still got Joe Mixon 159 yards rushing.
Insane.
And Mixon looked phenomenal picking up in pass protection.
Yep.
So I think that it's only going to get better for this line. So I'm blessing on that.
Dari and Pierce, too. And I would say something we didn't mention was, you know, that turf there was kind of a joke. And I think
it
that
really
played
was
a factor. You could tell the lineman and quarterback was slipping. So I'm glad to hear that we're all on the same page.
Yeah, Joe Mixon could have had more than 159 because he slipped on a few big runs, too.
And don't get it twisted. It wasn't just the turf. It was the fact that the paint on the turf caused CJ to fall on that one.
Yeah, CJ slipped,
right. So it was extra slippery because of that.
Yeah, and I don't know how much y'all looked into it, but I saw like it was some new experiment they were doing. It was like some organic coconut.
Yes, it was.
Yeah,
McAfee was making fun of it because instead of the little black pellets, the rubber underneath the turf, it is. It's like coconut blended something or other that was really funky and slippery.
And so I don't know. I think they try to say they did that just to try to find a new solution, but I don't know if it's some environmental friendly thing. But whatever it was, I mean, I'm sure their fans aren't too happy too. I mean, because it affected both teams.
Jim Irsay is known to dabble with environmentally friendly things every now and then. What else you got for us?
Listener, Bradley Hanna on X said, Damian Pierce, we didn't see a lot from him, but from what we saw was very nice and impactful. He said the whole Houston O-line just looked great, letting both backs average 5.3 yards per carry. He said, I also worked with the guys at 975 earlier this summer. It's a great business up there. Can't wait to tune in. So,
well, that's the kind of listeners that we love. We talked a little about this a little bit. I didn't see a lot of Damian Pierce, but what I saw I liked because he got positive yardage. And so I'm blessing on this because of the fact that as much as I liked what I saw of Cam Akers, and I thought Cam Akers was a guy, no matter what the depth chart said, sometimes they just do that for aesthetics. I thought he would be active in play. He didn't. But now, as we talk about an older running back that was so productive in Joe Mixon, I think as we go on through the season, you're going to see the systems that use for different different versions of the game, like once in the first half, once in the second half. You'll have a series for each for Pierce to kind of give Mixon a spell. If he does what he did against Indy and he's able to get positive yardage, I'm totally fine with it. I'm encouraged with riding him as the backup running back.
I hate to ride the fence on this one, but it's kind of what I feel on it because, I mean, certainly the results are blessing. I mean, he only had three carries, but he still showed some explosion. I thought he looked great when he actually had the ball in his hands, looked explosive like his rookie year. But what we saw in his runs, or like what I would like to see to feel great about Damian Pierce is him being able to run the zone play, find the cut lane, make the cut, and not run into the back of his offensive lineman like he did so much last year, like not being able to find the hole. And what we saw in his three runs was he was just hitting the hole, running straight ahead, full speed. And he looked explosive doing it, but I think we still have to answer the question, can he truly fit in the scheme like Joe Mixon did, you know, press the hole and cut back? I don't think we really saw that from Damian Pierce in his limited action on Sunday.
Yeah, so I'm definitely blessing on Damian Pierce. I mean, we all know from the preseason we were all watching, there was a stark difference between watching him and the rest of the backs, not only Cam Akers, but all the other guys that were trying to make the team. So, but, you know, it is a couple things to remember in that situation. One, it was a small sample size. And two, a preseason game is very disjointed. You got a mixed match of different level of guys, ones and twos. So, you know, it's hard. You know, we're all prisoners of the moment, so it's hard to keep that in mind to remember big picture. But, again, that this, you know, although he looked good, this is still a limited sample size. The first run, it seemed like it was kind of up the gut, a gap run where he can run straight downhill. But the second one was more of the outside zone, which he did well on. He did do great in pass pro, but I just think in general, as a whole, I am big time blessing on the run game. I know Mixon obviously is a stud and takes it to the next level, but I think the offensive line is not getting enough credit in, their role.
Let's get one more in here before you get out of here.
Okay, yeah, so this one I'll go Astros. Justin Verlander, blessing or stressing? I hate to say it right now, I'm stressing. He's been a great pitcher for us over the years, but lately since he came back from his injury, I don't know. Right now, I heard y'all on the radio coming up here. He's potentially on the bubble for the playoff roster. Does he come in at the bullpen? I'm stressing at the moment. Hopefully, he figures it out. I don't know what you guys think about JV.
Oh, I'm very much stressing. And if you heard the earlier conversation, I'm sure you would have guessed that would be my reaction. Yeah, you mentioned it. Since he came off the injured list and the two rehab starts in the minors, the four starts he's had in the majors, we saw the blow-up against Cincinnati where he walked the bases loaded, couldn't get out of the – well, he went past the first inning, but he got rocked in the first inning. Then his last starts, he gives up home runs. He gives up eight runs before he gets out of the game. His ERA in those four starts is well over six or seven. I'm stressed out right now. I know he can hit 97, which is great, but he seems to have no idea where the ball is going. His command, especially with his fastball, is not great, and he's getting hammered. I'm very stressing right now with Justin Verlander. Yeah,
and if you heard, like you said, BMAC, you heard our comments previously in the show. That's where I'm at as well, and the fact that I don't care about the back of the baseball card. What I really care about is that this is a guy that was so heavily relied upon in the past when you got to the postseason that the expectations have changed so drastically that we're not talking about a guy that can be an ace. We're not talking about a guy that can actually give you a quality start. You're talking about a guy where the next couple of starts are imperative to prove that he's capable of pitching in the playoffs for you at all. And that's what I'm stressing about, because that's not what I signed up for when I traded two top prospects to get him. That's not the JV that I've known in the past. The question is, can we find any semblance of what JV used to be for at least the rest of this playoff run, and I'm worried about that. Well, we appreciate you coming in, man. Hey, look, we tell you guys all the time that you need to follow Garrett and you need to keep in contact with him because he's got a lot of great things going on. You can follow him at Texans Commenter on X and TikTok and YouTube, and you can follow him on IG at Houston Stressens. That's Stressans on IG. We're going to do this on a pretty consistent basis week to week. We appreciate you coming in. Good first show, buddy.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it, Joel. Thank
there you
guys.
Go. Check him out anytime you get a chance. We're going to come back with a lot more coming up on this show. We're going to talk a little bit more about the quarterback of your favorite football team. Are we comfortable saying C.J. Stroud is the third best quarterback in the NFL? Have we seen enough? Do we know enough? What have we seen of the other quarterbacks as well? We'll kick that around next. It is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5. You You found the killer bees. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Back rolling through hour number two, 3 hour extravaganza. Killer bees, the hive is alive as BMAC and I take you up until 6 p.m. Jeremy getting a little R&R today as the voice kind of petered out on him. If you were listening yesterday and was a no-go today, hopefully he's back tomorrow. But we've been having a great show, and if you missed any of it, you can catch up on it on the website. But we had Cole Thompson in to talk Texans and SEC. We had Houston Stressins and our good man Garrett come in and talk about some of the blessing and stressings of Houston sports. As we continue to roll on, though, BMAC, look, a lot was being taken away from a lot of quarterback play in week one of the NFL. And we kind of kicked it around a little bit yesterday in the fact that numbers are down. 17 quarterbacks threw for 200 yards or less. But it also was the cream of the crop where some of the good ones still played obviously very well. We saw CJ play well. We saw Mahomes play very well. We saw some guys, Josh Allen had four touchdowns, played very well. So we saw some guys that did some things. But are you comfortable saying after week one of the regular season that CJ Stroud is the third best quarterback in the league?
Yeah, no, I absolutely am. And I'm not really worried about the league-wide numbers being down. I think that's just a product of guys, for the most part, aren't playing in the preseason games, and even if they are, like CJ did in two games, they're playing for a series or two. So they're just not getting, you know, the live reps and rhythm and timing that would come with playing in real games. So it's not shocking to see week one the numbers be down a little bit. So I think that'll bounce back pretty quickly. But when I look at it, and we're basing this off a list from The Athletic. They're doing like a quarterback power ranking basically week to week. So going into last week, they had Stroud at number 7, and after this week moved him up to number 3 behind only Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes. So that's kind of the basis of this. And my reaction to it is actually, I wouldn't mind having him. This is going to sound extremely hot takey, extremely like I'm wearing battle red glasses, drinking the home Kool-Aid, but I wouldn't mind putting Stroud as high as 2. And what I'm basing that off on, and obviously behind Mahomes, you can't make the argument for Stroud over Mahomes. What I'm basing that on is, like, if I had one game to win, what quarterback would I want? What quarterback would give me the most confidence they could win that one game right now? Not factoring in for veterans like Stafford and Rodgers, what they did 10 years ago. Current form right now, who do I have most confidence in to win a game? Mahomes is the only guy I have more confidence in right now than C.J. Stroud. I mean, there's certainly arguments there for Allen, Lamar, Burrow, although less so after last week. But I would take Stroud as 2, so I have no problem with this third ranking.
See, to me, there's criteria. You know me, I'm always on the criteria on these things. The criteria matters. To me, it's like, who's your full complement of people around you, right? I think just from this, purely as a quarterback, I would look at Josh Allen and say, Josh Allen, as much as, and I know Jeremy is anti-Josh Allen in a lot of ways, Josh Allen is a guy that could beat you with his legs. He could beat you with his arm. Yes, he has issues from in the past of turning the ball over. He's also performed really, really well in the big games, on the big stage, when he's done the battles and the back and forth with Mahomes. He won you a game almost all by himself single-handedly in the snow a year ago. Josh Allen's a guy that, to me, is in that conversation simply because he hasn't won the big one. He hasn't been able to beat Mahomes. But in the one year, he dueled him to the death until the rules basically took it out of his hands. And I'm not willing to turn the page on him just yet. C.J. Stroud has played really, really well in one year. C.J. Stroud has a playoff win where he played well. But then C.J. Stroud found a kryptonite against a really good Baltimore team twice in the same year where he couldn't get it done. So I hear what you're saying, but I'm also not going to say that it's just Mahomes and then CJ. I think the conversation is 5 guys, although Burrow to me right now, the current state of Joe Burrow has me with more questions than answers, so I can't put him above any of these other guys right now. I don't think Lamar played awful, but I think he'll play better, and he played a really good team in Kansas City. Josh Allen played really well. I definitely think that CJ's in the mix with those guys, but I would go Mahomes, Allen, and then CJ and Lamar, because Lamar's beaten CJ twice. Right now, I'm going to just go head-to-heads, and I'd say I'd put CJ 4th. I'd put Lamar 3rd, Josh Allen 2nd. I'd put Mahomes 1. That can change. That's fluid, but that's because of where we are right now.
Yeah, it's certainly not unfair. I mean, those two guys have a lot more on their resume than CJ Stroud does obviously. But when I'm just kind of looking at this year, I mean, CJ goes on the road and beats a pretty good team with the Colts, and he's a big part of it. He's not one of these quarterbacks that threw for 150 yards and relied on the not the running game was awesome, but he didn't have to have the running game in the defense win it for him. He was great in that game as well. So, and then when you compare it to Josh Allen was great, but at home against the Cardinals, like that was a game they trailed for at least what the first half, maybe sometime into the third quarter. It wasn't as impressive as a win for me. And I mean, the last time we saw Allen in the playoffs, I know he had the overtime heroic game, or the game that he should have had a chance to win in overtime against Patrick Mahomes. But that's what, 3 years ago now? Last time we saw him play in the playoffs against the Chiefs, it didn't go very well. They didn't play very well. So I'm kind of trending down for, you know, Allen, where Stroud is trending up, and then to Lamar. It's tough to make the argument because Lamar beat him twice. But, I mean, a lot of that is the Ravens' defense beating Stroud, not necessarily Lamar. And Lamar, like we saw in the Chiefs game, it's just hard to ever see him being consistent in these big game scenarios when he's still a guy in year, what, six? He was a rookie in 2018. Well, he's still a guy in season six or seven that he never seems to deliver the ball when his back foot hits on his drop. He's a guy that doesn't like Jeremy will say, he doesn't make the easy plays look easy. The back foot hits and he's looking, tapping the ball, running. And if it's not there, he's running. Yeah. He's still not a guy that I think can consistently make the easy play from the pocket where CJ is, and I think Allen's trending a little bit down. I didn't like that they struggled against Arizona, so that's why I would have Stroud above those two, but I can certainly see the argument for the opposite.
But here's the thing, too. When you're talking about, like, the opponent matters, it's weird because I saw on Cowherd's show they were talking about, well, we had Indy rated in the 20s in terms of what kind of team they can be. Obviously, as a show, we have Indy rated a lot higher. You were talking about yesterday that Arizona, you know, might be fighting for a wild card spot because they've got talent on that team. So I think that factors in. I think that Lamar was playing a really good defense in the Chiefs. But the thing that worries me the most about Lamar is, a year ago, they said he wasn't going to run as much. Now he's lost weight, but he tried to run more, and he took some hits, and he was dropping some shoulders, and he was doing some things you don't want to see a guy like that do either, because now you bring injury into the picture. And so that's where, from my perspective, I'm curious how much more that he's going to do, and if that's going to be a consistent thing with him, or that's just because he was fired up, and he wanted to try and make any play possible against a team like the Chiefs that they're trying to prove they can beat.
Yeah, I don't think you could change Lamar. I mean, he was a rookie in 2018. This is year six or seven. I think he is who he is. I think if he was going to be a guy that stopped running and decided to beat guys from the pocket consistently like Mahomes and Stroud do, then he would have done it by now. I think what we've seen is he's this far into his career, and like I said, you know, previously, he's still a guy that when his back foot hits on his drop, he doesn't seem to know where he wants to go with the ball. He's still having to buy time with his legs. We saw it in the closing moments of that Chiefs game where they let like 30, 40 seconds run off the clock because it took forever for Lamar to make the play to get down there because he has to scramble around, wait for Zay Flowers or somebody to come open because he doesn't seem to be able to make that quick read, make that quick decision, and make the easy play like CJ does. So I don't think he's going to stop running because he can't stop running. He hasn't advanced yet to a place where, this sounds crazy, he's a second-year quarterback, but he hasn't advanced to where CJ is, where the back foot hits, he's ready to make the play.
Yeah, I think that the most interesting name on this list of the Athletic in this these rankings of their top 10 is Burrow at 5. Because as high as Burrow was ranked, and I totally get it, I think we all got it as a show, we put Burrow in our top 3 to start the season. When you look at what he hasn't done and how badly they played, how they lost a game they should have won, and then you look at the fact that he's struggling to pick up a Gatorade bottle, and people are showing video all over social media where they're questioning like the strength and what his arm truly feels like. That's where there's more questions than answers from the standpoint of no one questions that if he has, he's right. He's 100% healthy, and he's got all the tools in his tool belt. He can play with anybody. But if this is what we're seeing of Joe Burrow, and we don't know if it's going to change and when it's going to change and when he gets back to that form, I don't know if I'd have him as high as number 6 right now.
Yeah, it's it's tough because obviously you know I've been high on Burrow. I've been carrying the Kool-Aid for Joe Burrow this entire offseason.
He can't carry it himself. He needs your help.
Exactly. He needs my help. Yeah, I thought Joe Burrow was still the guy that we saw go into Arrowhead multiple times and beat Patrick Mahomes, the guy to go the win into Buffalo in a snowstorm and beat the Bills, go to the Super Bowl and take the Rams down to the wire. I thought he was still that guy, but rather it be, you know, Jamar's obviously maybe a little bit rusty because he sat out during training camp. They were missing T. Higgins in the first game, so maybe you could make that excuse. You can make the excuse they didn't have Joe Mixon, although that won't change the season because he's not coming back. Or it could be that Burrow's just not right physically. He had the calf injury last year. He had another injury, which I'm blanking on at the moment. Obviously, he's got a problem right now with his wrist. It might be a point where Burrow has just had so many physical ailments that he's just not himself. And if I knew he was healthy, I think I would probably put Burrow second. I have that much belief in his ability. But right now, this version of Burrow, until we see him take a step forward, yeah, I don't think you're wrong. I think I might move him down a few spots. Five might be a little high for this version of Joe Burrow.
So if you're curious, the Athletic's top 10 going into week 2, Mahomes 1, Josh Allen 2, CJ 3, Lamar 4, Burrow 5, then Rodgers, Stafford, Dak, Herbert, and Purdy. And we can kind of check back in on these lists from time to time as we continue to move forward. But that's going to wrap up hour number 2 of the 3-hour extravaganza. We got an hour left on the books and 60 minutes still to go. Lots more on the show. Bleacher Report says that the Texans had 5 big weaknesses, or at least weaknesses that they noticed. We'll let you know what those are, let you know how we think that list stacks up as opposed to what we think the weaknesses might be. Let us know what you think. 713-780-3776. Call or text. Hit us on social media. It's the final hour of the Bees coming up next on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.